There's this fabulous novel by George Saunders, Lincoln and the Bardo. Have you read it?
I've dipped in and out.
You know the basic premise, that there's these people living in a cemetery, and Lincoln's, this is a historical thing, that Lincoln's son has died, and Lincoln was severely depressed and was unable to stay away from where his son's body was. So in the novel, there's a certain point where the people in the cemetery, the Bardo, decide to help Lincoln out. And they jump into him and to say, "You can't keep on coming here. You have to stay over there, and he has to stay over here. You're hurting him by coming in here because he can't see that he's dead." What happens afterwards, I just couldn't stop thinking about it. They, like the people, when they jump out after helping Mr. Lincoln, they say, "When I was inside Mr. Lincoln, I found out that Mr. Jackson isn't president anymore. That there's been a Mr. Pierce, there's been a Mr. Buchanan, and now Mr. Lincoln is president." And one of the things that I realized is that, when I'm reading, in the way that I'm saying, "Oh, this is reason to read," is that the text is jumping inside of me to help me out. And there, it's like stirring around and helping me out. But when it's inside me, it catches up to the present. And I have a feeling that it's not only me changed by those texts, but the texts are permanently changed by me. How did, say, this love letter between two people in Song of Songs end up in the Bible as being about something about humans and God? How did that happen? Everyone can see this is about a love letter between two persons. How is it that people are reading it in this way? And you can just say, again and again, how is it that Buddhists were reading this folk story common in India and say, "That's about the Buddha"? It was just waiting for Buddhists to turn it into what it was meant to be. And so that's a very, very powerful theory of a text. And you say, well, we're on the road to having what I would call a scripture, where you say, "Well, this is for me. This is, he left this here for me." All right, so that kind of thing. The other thing that I like, the other anecdote from Smith that I like a lot, is that someone once, he was a scholar of Islam, an academic, someone once asked him in public, "Has the Quran ever been a scripture for you?" And he thought about it, and then, once. And then he tells this anecdote that he was living in Lahore at the time of India's partition. He was teaching in a school there. He was married, had children, and he had sent his family home before him. And so he was traveling on a ship home alone on the Red Sea and didn't know what was ahead and horrified what was behind. "I was there alone, troubled. And what popped into his mind was a line from the Quran, 'My mercy is more than sufficient for you.'" And he said, "I felt at ease." You have samvega, the fear of the inevitable. Then you have pasada, I'm taken care of. The inevitable isn't the only thing. And those, so it's that's like really cold-eyed. You're not saying, "Oh, everything's going to be right." You have like this,
An ease with the inevitable.
it's an ease at the same time that you have this fear of the inevitable. And one of the things also, that is very striking and implicit in what Smith is saying in that anecdote is he had read the Quran many times. But all those times it was just a text.
It was on the shelf as well.
It was in his mental shelf.
Yeah, his mental shelf.
But something had to happen where that text jumped into, Lincoln and the Bardo. It jumped inside of Smith and mixed around. And then when it popped back out with Smith's testimony to it, I'm repeating it in a way that the text has been changed because of what happened to it because of Smith, that I can't read the Quran with, if I come across that line, I was like, "Oh, There you are. And then it's like, you know, in the tea ceremony, they said, I just noticed that it's like some green color over here.
Yeah.
It's kind of a, and then I start to see, you know, and the guitar strings start to vibrate again. And you say, well, for me, you know, there's a question. I can study Qi as a figure in the history of Buddhist thought. Or I can try to stand shoulder to shoulder with Qi. And let him try to teach me what is he seeing and why is he saying one thought is the 3,000 worlds. I just have become convinced that there's no point to me trying to give a history of Buddhist thought, of history of Buddhism, if I can't have some approximation of what GE is seeing when he says, one thought is the 3,000 worlds. So I have to learn how to get into a space where he's saying, do you see that? And I can say, yes, tell me more about that.
And how do you access that?
There's a story that Kenneth Morgan tells, and he wrote up in his memoir he wrote in his old age. And so he says, I was walking on the street called Straight in Damascus. So apparently there is a street in Damascus, and it's like very like overdetermined because, you know, Islam's name for itself is the straight path, right? He was an excellent storyteller. So he says, I was walking on the street called Straight, wondering if this is in fact the oldest street in continuous use in the world. A very academic question. And he says, when he's there, some man on a bicycle runs into a man pushing a cart full of fruit, and the fruit's knocked over. Angry words are exchanged. The crowd gathers. Fists are raised. And he's there watching, and he says, and a little man came out of the crowd and took the fist and kissed it. And everyone laughed. People started picking up the fruit. People went the other way. And he said, I didn't know if he was a Syrian Muslim, a Syrian Jew. But the point is, something important happened there. And for me, the point of the story that he starts, I was walking on the street called Straight, wondering if this is indeed the, you say, we fill our time asking these useless questions until something presents itself in front of us in which, how did that man do that? And I'm not going to be able to, and I really want to know. I want to know how to end violence. I really want to know how to take that moment that is of anger and violence, turn it in another direction without force. I really want to know that. And knowing if that man is a Jew or a Christian or a Muslim is only a very, very small portion of that story. That's what we're doing. We're trying to figure that those kinds of moments out. For me, the liability that I bring to everything is I think I know something. And I come to the text in which I want to say, let me tell you what you are. I feel very strongly that the whole point of being like an academic in Buddhist studies, that it has to, in some sense, address me as a person.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there's no point.
Yeah.
John Ross Carter came to see me here at Harvard Divinity School a number of years ago, and he kind of came prepared. The thing that he wanted to ask me, he said, oh, it's been 40 years since you graduated from university. So in those decades, what have you learned about education? So for me, it was like a best question, really, a great question. And so I said to him, I've learned that it only begins when you're called into question. And he said to me, do you mean that you are invited? And I said, no, I mean when he said, I can't go on talking about myself in the way that I was anymore because of what I, that doesn't mean I know how to talk in a different way. Yeah. I just know that I've been called into question. Mm-hmm. I connect that to the lines of the with the Buddha where he said, oh, the religious life stands on two legs. And one of them is the voice of another. And that voice of another, for me, always calls you into question. And it's like, do you know? Do you know? And so you have to begin by saying, I just can't go on talking the way that I have been talking. Now that I... The other really great memory was I asked Carter if he would like to meet some of the master students at Harvard Divinity School. And so we gathered around a big table, and the first thing he asked was, when you're studying Buddhism, what are you studying? And I know the answer. And the answer is me. That's the only thing, I'm studying me. And that studying me involves being called into question.
Called into question. Wow.
Because I don't really know who I am. Yeah. I don't know what's possible.